Welcome to the MS Dev Show, episode number 119. This week we talk with Darren May and Jerry Nixon about developing UWP applications for Xbox. Azure gets GPU capabilities. And we get the best feedback we've ever seen.
This episode of the MS Dev Show is brought to you by Infragistics, providing tools and solutions to accelerate design, development, insights, and collaboration for any organization.
This week we have Darren May. He's president and co-founder of Crank to 11, a digital agency that produces next-level experiences. And he does a lot of UWP and XAML development. Welcome, Darren.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. And we also have the fourth-time reigning champion, Jerry Nixon, developer evangelist from Colorado. And he also does a lot of UWP and XAML development. How's it going, Jerry?
Hi, Carl.
And of course we have Carl, who just got back from that conference. How was that conference, Carl?
It was excellent. So, you know, funny thing is I actually just saw Jerry yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yesterday from our point of view.
That's why you have that glow, Carl.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was because of the lack of sleep and
Yeah, I was thinking about this yesterday. So Carl has sent me all of the audio from that conference, but I haven't listened to it yet. So the people listening to this episode have already heard it, and I haven't heard it. So our listeners get to hear it before I do, if that makes sense. I don't think it makes sense, but it does,
but
at the same time.
But you have to edit it yet.
Yeah, I know. But they'll have already heard it.
You've seen a Star Trek episode about that.
Yeah, I think I'm already
doing it. You have to go back in time.
Yeah,
fix what's been broken.
Those are the best episodes.
Yeah, but we had a blast there. Jerry gave away a lot of our swag.
Mm-hmm.
He did.
Oh, really?
In the middle of recording too. So you'll find that out, Jason.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great. Here you want one of these?
So he's costing us a lot of money, huh?
He's getting to like these serious questions asking me, and I'm like, "Hey, kid," the whole time.
I can't believe he made the mistake of having you on. Although now we're just doing it again, four times the punishment here.
We don't learn.
Yeah. Okay. So did you want to talk about these mugs, Carl? These home defense weapons?
I don't learn.
Yes. So we finally got our mugs printed that we talked about a while back.
Yeah.
So Jerry's got one. I've got one. You've got one. So the people on video are getting assaulted by.
Oh, yeah. The people on audio are like, what's going on?
And,
oh, Jerry, I had something to show you then.
We got a bunch. We had a bunch of these given out at that conference, but we didn't give them out to just anybody because they're mugs.
Nice.
We gave out a lot of these sweet plastic cups. So now Jason's showing off Star Trek.
I have a Captain Kirk doll.
Well, I was showing that it had Spock in it, but I just want to prove you could put the whole crew into this one mug. It's a gigantic mug.
So nobody's going to – and I'm totally changing the subject, but hopefully our
that mug is the disc section of the Enterprise.
Do you see what I paid for this? So these things normally sell for $50. I was at a little shop, and they sold this for $12.
Oh, my gosh. They didn't know what they had.
I know. And actually, the guy's like, everybody keeps telling us that this should be selling for more. And I'm like, I'll take it. It's a Captain Kirk doll and a book. And I'm just like, oh, this is so cool. I got to put
that in office. Don't collect dolls. Although I do have this.
Yes.
It's an action figure.
Just happens to be to hand.
Just happens
to have to move for it.
Jerry's got a pile of action figures.
He's talking to her. Oh, wait. I do have this awesome one. Check this out.
Okay. So Jerry's got the entire crew.
It says to boldly go. Goes on the bathroom.
Oh, my God. Okay. So, everybody, you got to go check out the video feed on Channel 9 because, Jerry is a collector. That is awesome.
Going to get a cease and desist. I went to the marathon, the Star Trek marathon, 1, 2, 3, back to back. 2 days before it released, it was awesome. And look, they gave me this. It's a patch.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, I don't know who actually wears patches anymore, but I got one. Yeah. And the collector poster.
He's
which
off. He'll come back in about an hour now.
I'm jealous.
What are we here talking about again?
Yeah, I don't know. So, Carl, anything else you want to mention about that conference?
No, it was just a really great time to be there, meet everybody, talk to a lot of really cool people about a lot of things. And everybody will have heard it already. So it was just fun. So
I have
Carl,
to go
I think for a, I think for a, a, a community conference. It's the most high-end community conference I've ever been to.
Mm-hmm. It is. So one of the things that happened, I wasn't going to mention it, but I got interviewed by Seth Juarez for Channel 9, and somebody had taken a picture and posted it on my behalf, and I put it on Facebook, and everybody was like, oh my gosh, what an amazing professional level, you know, thing, just because it was up on the set that on the main stage. And it was just, it really did look like it was like, you know, a several hundred thousand dollar stage. And it was just, it was the most beautiful picture, not because of me and Seth, more Seth than me, but I mean, it just looked really nice. It was an awesome setting.
Vote at feedback@msdevshow.com. Who looks better?
Yeah, we don't have to.
It's a lot like where you were recording, you know, in the corner in front of the closet.
Yeah, they had us on the side.
Yeah.
That's okay.
That's funny. That's funny.
You did have the best looking booth, though, as far as like color.
We did. We had color in. Everybody else had boring booths. We had awesome one, and we had awesome stuff to give away.
Mm-hmm.
Jason, you missed everything.
I have to make it next year. But anyway, I got to try to keep this show on track because we have some awesome feedback this week for the Infragistics Ultimate Winner of the Week. So tell us about this one, Carl.
So Jason said this just might be the best feedback we've ever gotten. Yes. So if you've got better feedback, we want to hear it. Absolutely. So this came from an email from Jesper Bonsgaard, and he said he just finished listening to all of the episodes that we've ever done. And he has to say he has loved every minute. Since he started listening to the show, which he only started in January, he's started working out and has lost 40 pounds already, started using his standing desk as an actual standing desk instead of adjustable height desk. He's talked to his computer with Cortana and used bots with it. He's bought and used Pocket Cast, the podcast app, to the point where it's the most used app on his phone, and even gave a picture that says he's listened to like over 7 days of content on it. Mm-hmm. He's played with Azure Functions, Microsoft Cognitive Services, UWP apps, Electron Shell, Template 10, VS Code, Xamarin, Windows 10 IoT Core, and others that he's forgotten at this point. And he's also spammed every single dev that he knows with all the stuff that he's learned from the episodes. And then he ends it saying, and has it been fun? Hell yeah. So thanks for making an interesting podcast that makes a daily commuting less annoying with podcasts, with interesting guests and topics and news that are still interesting even years later, amazing sound quality and fun, and lots of fun. Go make another episode. I'm out. So thank you, Jesper. That was pretty epic. And you've actually done a ton of stuff. So if you have an Xbox, today's going to be a fun day for you.
Yeah, this is awesome. So we love you. I kind of wish he had submitted this for a swag bag, even though we don't really have any right now. But maybe he can mention this again the next time we do that. He's a shoo-in.
So if you have anything to toss Jesper's comment or not, if you want to get mentioned on the show, send us an email to feedback@msdevshow.com. Comment on Facebook, YouTube, or Stitcher. We really like those 5-star iTunes reviews. And just as a little bit of housekeeping update, I was a little bit behind on giving Infragistics all of the winners, so I got everybody who sent in an email. If you had won and hadn't heard anything yet, I do need your email address. So send that to feedback@msdevshow.com or DM me on Twitter. We'll get that in.
Awesome. Okay, so let's jump into the news. So what do we got here? Flash and Chrome. What's going on now? I thought Flash was dead.
So it's dead, but people are still using it.
It's not apparently. Dead yet.
Not dead yet.
Not dead yet.
But a flesh wound.
Just a flesh wound, yeah.
I like how you do the accent. It's really close to the real one.
I know. It's uncanny, isn't it?
Yeah, so what's going on, Carl?
So apparently Chrome is going forward. If it sees on your page that you're using HTML5 and Flash, even if you tell it to use Flash first, if it sees that HTML5, it's going to emphasize that first. So it's going to prioritize that and de-emphasize Flash wherever it can.
Okay.
So I think it's a good move forward and kind of important if you're a dev and working on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think kind of the key sites out there have gotten rid of Flash now and support HTML5, which is great. Because, there's browsers now and mobile platforms and that. I mean, if you still have Flash content, if that's your only outlet, then that's going to be a big problem.
But actually, the article that you linked to is very interesting, because what they're saying there is that 90% of Flash is actually used behind the scenes now for analytics. And that's really what's slowing things down. So I think there's less and less emphasis on it for interactive content, more for this kind of dynamic scripting and monitoring and those kind of things. And so
people have even used it to access the clipboard, and then there's so many vulnerabilities too.
Yeah.
I'm always surprised, aren't you, when you come to a site and it has Flash?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Silverlight, honestly. I'm amazed that enough time hasn't passed already for everything to be expunged from the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. It's still
there. Yeah, and those sites that tell you need to update Flash, do you ever get to those?
Yeah,
that's when you just leave the site.
Yeah, honestly, like that's kind of like the indicator that's dead for me is like when I come to something that says like, you know, you need to install Silverlight or Flash or whatever. I'm at the point now where I just say, no, I'm just going to avoid this right now. Like nothing, there hasn't been anything important enough for me to do either of those things. So
yeah, there's that raw wound got scraped open again. You mentioned the Silverlight word.
Yeah. And true. He always has to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So Fog Creek kills Harmony.
Yeah. So quite a few years ago, Fog Creek had for their version control system in Kiln, they allowed you to do either Git or Mercurial. Mm-hmm. And they created this technology called Harmony that lets you, you know, push in your code with one and pull in another. You could mix and match as much as you wanted, and it would just translate. And from either side, it looked like it was always done in Mercurial or always done in Git. And I actually had used that quite a bit because I had started using Mercurial before Git, and I'm still a little bit more comfortable with Mercurial. Mm-hmm. So sometimes what I would do is my personal repository would be in Kiln, and if I wanted to push that private repo to public one, I would use Harmony to just push that to my public GitHub account.
It was definitely the easiest converter.
it was so easy to do. And they announced that it's actually been really hard for them to upkeep. Which and starting September 15th, that they're no longer going to be providing that service anymore because it was affecting people that weren't even using it.
Yeah.
So unfortunately for people like me, I didn't use it a whole lot, but it was still kind of useful. We're not going to have that feature anymore. Mm-hmm. But the other reason why I wanted to get this out is I haven't seen a blog post about this. They're only sending out email, or if you log into the site. If you log in, they'll put a little banner on the page saying, hey, just so you know. But it's kind of interesting. They haven't been super public with it.
Yeah. I think it's fine.
Well, that
it's going
ended
away.
Now, didn't it?
Yeah.
We've just outed them. They're like,
no.
Okay, Microsoft readies Azure GPUs. Awesome.
Super awesome.
Yeah. A lot of people were really, really waiting for this. So big companies that do a lot of GPU-related computation or rendering and, you know, were switching over to Azure, were just banging down our door to get this functionality. And, you know, the engineering teams wanted to make sure that they did it right. So it took a while. I mean, AWS had this functionality for a few years. I think Azure has caught up, actually, based on everything I've been reading, they've passed up AWS. If you read the Hacker News comments, they're talking this is a couple of years newer technology, you know, newer GPUs, and then from a pricing perspective, you actually get a lot more for your money because you're actually getting a physical card assigned to that virtual machine, so you actually get a lot more value out of this. So if GPU rendering or computation, either one of those two workloads, is something that you've been waiting for and wanted to do that in the cloud, then wait no longer.
Wait no longer. It was a blocker for a lot of startups, too.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to see this finally arrive.
Yep.
And look, we can do it on the desktop now, right? You can code directly to the GPU today. Mm-hmm. You just can't do it when you go to the server. It was kind of a bummer. Now you can.
Yeah, which kind of makes sense. I mean, it was just kind of an awkward thing. I mean, usually, you know, these servers are headless, so putting a video card in them is kind of awkward. But, you know, the world has changed. Like, GPUs are so good for computation. And then obviously we have, you know, 3D rendering, and we need to send that over things like remote desktop. So, mm-hmm. you know, the world just changed, and we needed this functionality. And, well, it's there now. Okay, the People's Code.
Yeah, the White House announced today, or yesterday, that they're having this new federal source code policy that's going to force government agencies on new custom software they build to kind of share that code.
Okay.
Now, the one thing for me that was a little disappointing is it doesn't say that they have to share it with us, the people paying for it, but they have to at least share it with other government agencies in order to reduce the amount of, you know, redundancy that, you know, they're not paying for the same code to be written several times. So this is a step forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can we finally get the source code for that iPad app that, you know, has the arrow that points left?
That
to
random
right?
Tap 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 tap.
We'll see how badly that was written.
That's quite an assumption. I mean, you would think for $300,000, it was awesome. Yeah.
I know. I think you were on last time, Jerry, right, when we talked about that?
Yeah.
You know, it was probably the code was simple, but they had to pay all that money to make it inclusive.
Yeah. Yeah. <the,
laughs> It's accessible.
Yeah. Okay. There's probably like a certain arrow color that like offends people, and they just had to do a lot of research to make sure everybody was happy with it.
Right.
The edges couldn't be too sharp. Yeah.
Then make sure it was left, right language support.
Yeah. Yeah. Some cultures, left might be up. I don't know. This is probably like the opposite of what we're doing right now. Right. Engineering the move to cloud-based services. So this was an article from Microsoft IT on actually using Azure. So as you can imagine, anybody within Microsoft that is not using Azure, that's actually ordering physical servers, is they have a lot of explaining to do. So Microsoft IT is just talking about their whole transition to Azure. And it's kind of interesting because there are people, you know, there's a lot of people here on site in Redmond, and you need access to these cloud-based services. So how do you provide that? How do you move those things over to there? And how does that work? And from my perspective, I think this is great because, you know, there are a lot of employees like Jerry that are not in Redmond, right, that, you know, had to jump through all these hoops to get at those, you know, corporate resources. And one, from my perspective, one of the big advantages of having all this stuff in Azure is just like the sort of decoupling it from Redmond. So, I think there's some advantages there, because Jerry, I don't know if you've noticed, you know, my experience working remote has been that things like, you know, Skype for Business work a lot. You know, they work great from home. And then also like Office 365, because instead of trying to go through like this small pipe to get to the campus, you're actually going through this huge public pipe that everybody else is using to get at your resources. So, yeah. So I think it's just a better architecture. But what's interesting in this article too is just some of the numbers they throw out. And I never know like which of these are public or not. And when they put it in a blog post like this, well, then I can assume they're public. 120,000 employees. I think that's pretty widely known. But what most people don't realize, it says used by a combination of over 220,000 Microsoft employees and vendors. So you can sort of do the subtraction there. I mean, there's 100,000 basically contract employees.
Yeah.
Which is just this just massive army of people that people don't realize exists. 886 site locations. It's just mind boggling how big Microsoft is.
It's basically an office in every city.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it is, right? Yeah. In part.
Yeah, exactly.
Weren't you happy when they finally moved all the internal sites like MSW out to SharePoint?
Yes.
I'm gonna have to VPN in for that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, like, I'm sure there's lots of people listening that are like, my company isn't as forward thinking, so they have to go through some convoluted VPN. And you know, the thing is, like, at Microsoft, you can actually work. You can take a machine that's not even on the domain, and not even touch the corporate network, and you can actually get like 99% of your work done. And now with the workplace join in Windows, I noticed that they can actually enable the VPN through that. And I actually did some speed testing. So I have 100x100 fiber connection at home. I can actually push files to and from the Microsoft campus at 100 megabits.
Wow.
Like it saturates my connection. And just like, this is a VPN. Holy crap. I mean, it's just.
My phone's the same way. I have auto VPN.
Yeah, the auto VPN. That's
I didn't even realize it was auto VPN until I started using internal.
Yeah, so you start accessing. When you access internal resource, it is as fast as if, you know, it's as fast as your connection is. It's absolutely amazing. So it's just,
I think,
awesome.
That's because they copy it all down locally.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a secret, like, you know, terabyte hard drive because they, you
know.
There's
a big blue van outside. Partition.
Yeah, there's a hidden partition with all of the world's knowledge on it in there.
And you were, if there's somebody like you were talking to that's like, my company's not as forward-looking, I mean, you should know that Microsoft has to be one of the most forward-looking in the world, and we got it a whole 9 months ago. So, I mean, it's not – it's not like they're that far behind.
So I was at a company recently, and I'm not going to name names, but they, you know, they blocked Dropbox. So like Dropbox stops working when there. I think OneDrive was unblocked, and then you know, it's basically like every port outbound port is deemed evil unless, you know, considered otherwise. So when these companies start working with Azure, you know, they're like not able to connect to their virtual machines because they have RDP blocked, and it's just super frustrating. And then, you know, so the company that I was at, I mean, they're going to the system where like developers get like this special machine that they can do development on, but it's not allowed to connect to the internet. And it's, I don't know, you're just sacrificing so much productivity in the name of security. And I'm sure it's in response to something specific. But man, it's just painful. I mean,
it's normally just the default. It's better to deny everything than have to excuse an issue, you know. And you know, we always used to joke in previous sort of consultancies I used to work with, that IT was the team that liked to say no, because you know it's far easier to say no than it is to justify all of these things. And it's really interesting, as you point out, that the entire ecosystem of distributed features and functions that we're also accustomed to using now, there are many, many enterprises to which that is a completely closed area, that they're stuck with their internal resources, archaic VPN that gives you no ability to do any outbound connection whilst you're connected to their VPN.
Yeah, you can't print to the printer next to you.
Yes. Right, until you disconnect.
Yeah, it's crazy. Just crazy. Yeah, it's frustrating.
It is frustrating. Although I'd say if it were my dollar and it was my company and I was paying, I'd be tempted to block YouTube.
Yeah.
I'd be tempted.
Well, YouTube, not on Facebook.
Not in the name of security either. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. Well, so IT is like legal, and they're probably all of our listeners are going to hate me for this, but you know, it's just those people. the default answer is always no, right? Like, you know, Can we do this thing, you know? And you go to legal and they say, well, no, don't do it. And then, you know, you have to force the issue. And then they say, well, you can do it if you do this. IT is the same way. Can we do this? No. Okay, well, you know, we have to do this. Okay, well, then you got to do it this way. And, you know, I get there's some history.
And submit
there.
That in triplicate.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the world's changing. The world's changing. So anyway, yeah, so this article, it's a good read. I mean, there's not a whole lot of detail, but it just shows, you know, hey, we're a giant company. We're moving over to Azure. There's a little bit of pain, of course, because it's just, you know, it's just any kind of change is going to be a little bit of pain. But in the end, the benefit is worth it. And so I'm starting to see the benefits of that. Okay, well, let's talk about UWP on Xbox. Because I'm going to throw away all my computers. It's like these people that just like try to get real work done on an iPad, which fails miserably, by the way. I sold a Surface Book this week because the guy was looking at it and he's like, well, I can't do any work on my iPad. I don't have a mouse, you know. so am I going to throw away all my computers now and I can start doing, you know, just use my Xbox as my computer? So
basically, yeah. I think that's the short of the story.
Okay, and that's all we have for today.
Okay, thank you very much.
So first, I think we should back up just in case there are some developers that still might
don't
not
know what Xbox is.
Well, Xbox, well, they probably know what Xbox is, but UWP. So why don't you tell us what UWP is?
UWP is the future of Windows development. That's what it is. It's the next gen of Windows development too. It stands for Universal Windows Platform, and it allows us to build applications that are cross architecture. So it runs on multiple processors as well as cross family. We used to say cross platform, but I think that's a little bit too frustrating for people.
Yeah.
Cross family, as it goes from, you can run on your desktop or on the HoloLens or phone. And like today, we're going to be talking about, you can also run it on the Xbox, which wasn't available until, I don't know,
August
Darren,
2nd.
Last week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Until 2nd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is really what, if you've already started building this type of app, this UWP application, these are the things a developer needs to know in order to get it to work on Xbox. And to be super, super clear, we mean Xbox One, not Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't mean games at all. This isn't a game conversation. This is we actually can contrast them to productivity apps. So this is a productivity app conversation. So everything but a game. And it can be a productivity app with gamification, but that's not quite the same.
So if I had like a UWP app that I had already made for the desktop or something or phone, and it's like a card game or something, I can't get this on Xbox?
You can, but you have to go through ID at Xbox to do it.
Xbox, so, yes. So you can prototype using UWP development, and if you believe you've got a strong game, you can use that as the foundation for your application to ID at Xbox, which can then unlock the opportunity to publish it as a game.
Right. So if I have a game of any kind, it can still be UWP, but I have to go over to this special ID at Xbox to get it published that way. right.
Yeah, awesome. ID stands for Independent Developer at Xbox, and it's a program. And there's a lot. It's more stringent than the productivity side. The productivity side, it's dev.windows.com. Submit your application, and I mean, it's not immediately you're in, but pass that certification and you're in. And it's a lot simpler certification than being a game.
All right. So if I already have like maybe a Twitter client or maybe a text editor or something already written UWP, can I just publish that or get it, you know, hit build F5 to my Xbox and bam, I'm good?
Yes, you can. But yeah, whether you should or not is the broader question. Right. Basically, you can run any app that's designed for the desktop will run on the Xbox, and you could deploy it and run it without doing any major changes. The reason for that is when you run a UWP on Xbox, by default, it enables a mouse mode analog. So you're using your Xbox controller, your left joystick will move a mouse pointer around if anybody's ever used Internet Explorer or Edge on the Xbox One. Then you have that mouse cursor, and then your right joystick, I'm waggling my thumbs around, so if you're not on video, suck. If you use your right joystick, then you get a scrolling effect. So if you're in lists and so on, it'll scroll things around. So you have an experience. The broader question is that the optimal experience for the platform? And obviously the answer is probably no. So you can then opt into doing additional development that will allow you to leverage and focus on an experience for the Xbox as well.
Okay. Darren, when we start talking about all the things you have to do in order to make your app a good experience on Xbox, how big of an effort would you say it really is?
So there are, as always, tiers to that answer. So, switching off
hopefully
mouse
not
mode,
like, you know, tears from my eye.
Yeah,
well, they can be.
Your whole team is bald.
Both kinds of tears.
Yeah. So, you know, initially, a few things happen for you out of the box. So, on the Xbox, there is this concept of a safe area, and it's designed around legacy televisions that couldn't render information in what's called the overscan area or the border around your screen. So when you run a UWP application, by default, it gets its core window has a margin on it that letterboxes it inside the screen. Not a dramatic letterboxing, but puts it into the safe area. Yeah. The next thing that happens is it scales up the UI by 200%. So that, you know, the idea being that if you've designed something for the desktop, you know, it's probably a foot and a half away from your nose. Your TV in your living room is probably 10 feet away from your nose. So you're a 12px font isn't going to be particularly legible when it's at that distance. So the system by default will automatically scale that up so it's a 24px font, which is the recommended minimum. And so you get those things. But if we then turn off mouse mode, then we actually need to look at how focus works in our applications and how, say, for example, we don't generally design anymore, although we should, we don't generally design anymore for tab order because we assume everybody's got a mouse now. But when you start tabbing in some of these applications and you see where your focus jumps all around the place, we need to really start thinking about those things when we're going to use a linear navigation model such as the Xbox, you know, where we click down on our down arrow, where does focus go?
Yeah. And tab order has kind of changed a little bit, hasn't it? Where it used to be tab order, and it still is, by the way. Tab order is still numbered so that you can affect it wherever it goes. Mm-hmm. But in the Xbox world, that number isn't the issue. It's a visual tab order.
Mm-hmm. It's very much, you know, if you move your stick to the right, you have this focus manager.
Oh, it actually moves like the cursor as well?
Yeah. It'll move a focus rectangle. Okay. So that's probably something we should mention. You know, in the Anniversary Edition, across Windows 10 as a whole, the focus visual has completely changed. Instead of being the marching ants and the dotted outline around elements, and instead of most of the controls having focus visual states that are baked in that you can go and tweak around, instead we have a system focus visual that, as the name suggests, the system renders for us, that is a solid outline with an interior color as well that boxes the entire control. That is what
I want to make a quick shout out to that, because when the focus visual has changed to be high contrast focus visual and it's way easier to see, that we built it or we included it. I say we now as Microsoft, but anyway, it's part of Xbox because Xbox needed it, but our visually impaired colleagues benefit as well, even on the desktop, because it's such a better focus visual. Oh, you can see your focus actually is. So it's really cool how we did it for this, but everybody is kind of a winner of it.
Yeah.
It's also far more performant than it was before.
Yeah, cool. It's been done by the system and so on. But you can turn it off if you actually want to take it.
Especially after that, point, you can take it off because there might be some people you hate. Right.
Well, no, I can give you some concrete examples where you might want to do that. Mm-hmm. Actually, working.
You want
on
to have
Xbox.
A custom focus.
Exactly. So if you imagine, you know, some of the, say, you're building something that shows movies, you've got the poster art, and underneath it you might have the title of the movie. So if you start thinking about laying those things out in a grid, you probably want the focus just to appear around the poster art. You don't want it to also include the text underneath because it won't look particularly attractive. So that's a situation where you might want to override the system focus visual on that particular scenario.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. So it all the features we're about to talk about are controllable by the developer, but many of them come. So lots of things get caused to your application automatically, like that 200% scale. Of course, the developer can go in and say, I don't want it to be 200% scale. But out of the box, your UWP app, once you deploy it over onto the Xbox, automatically has these little gutters like on the side, which are quite small. You were right, Darren. That like they're 48 by 26. And so pretty small, really, but enough to make it so older TVs don't cut off whatever your content is as well. And so all of these things you get, they're all there. But then what no developer has ever developed for before is using a controller.
Yeah.
Right, that's where it all really changes.
Well, so before we get to that, one thing I wanted to understand was like Word, Excel, like those modern apps, do those work on my Xbox?
In theory, they should. If they're a UWP application, then they absolutely should.
None of us have actually checked the store to see if they're in there.
I haven't either. If you don't have a keyboard, it's going to be a rough experience.
There's like a little keyboard attachment, right, for the controller?
Yeah, that works. And also you can plug a USB keyboard into your Xbox One, and that works too.
Yeah.
And I think mouse support is actually coming at some point.
A Bluetooth keyboard on S probably, Darren.
Yeah, I think and Bluetooth mouse is coming at some point in time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, because then I can get my Excel on my Xbox.
Right.
I can show my kids that there's more than games in the world.
One thing I would say though is that currently your UWP experience on Xbox is much more akin to how, say, Windows 8 was, in that you had a single application that was full screen. You don't have windowing and those kind of things. Certainly in the current version.
Right.
Yeah. And if you've started to become accustomed to the APIs underneath and all the things you can do, there are a subset of APIs that simply don't apply to the Xbox. Things like inking aren't there because they kind of are irrelevant to an Xbox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you don't do a runtime test to see if that capability is there, that is, if you're writing an app that runs on two things, then you need to. The developer has to so it doesn't crash.
Yeah, okay. Things like the share contract and all that sort of stuff as well.
Infragistics, Ultimate UX and UI Tools, and Enterprise Mobility Solutions, SharePlus and ReportPlus, enable high-performance apps on any device, faster data insights, simplified collaboration, and market-leading security, all backed by comprehensive support. With Infragistics' Ultimate UX and UI Development Toolkit, you can ensure mission-critical applications delivering a superior user experience on the desktop, web, and native device environments for iOS and Android. With the latest BI tools, wow your users with dashboards providing the data insights that they need when and where they need it, all at a low total cost of ownership. Try it today. Download a free trial at infragistics.com and follow them for the latest updates in UX and UI development, reporting, and collaboration at Infragistics on Twitter. And remember, each week, if we pick your comment on the show, you will get a free copy of Infragistics Ultimate UX and UI Toolset.
Okay. Yep. So I know that there's things that aren't there, but are there, you know, what kind of features do you get in UWP on Xbox that I won't get everywhere else?
There's a kind of an edge case, which is multi-user applications. Mm-hmm. you know, on a Windows desktop, you only have one person logged in and active at any point in time. Xbox does support multiple users engaged with the controller and so on, right. And you can actually request the privilege to use a multi-user application in UWP, but it's actually so much of an edge case now that it's really not something that...
Yeah, I never thought of that. So is like player one the one that's controlling like the focus on that by default?
So the way that UWP works by default, it's a single-user application. Right. So yes, the current active account is the one under which your UWP app is launched. And on previous sort of Xbox development, if you would have to handle user change events, where if you hand it over to another user, you'd have to restart your environment, maybe pull in a different profile and so on and so forth. You don't do that at all in the current UWP environment. Your application will actually close down if the user that launched it logs off of Xbox.
Yeah.
And it's also, you have to be a logged in user. You can't have a guest account in order to be able to launch an app, because it's going to verify that you have the license from the store to run the application. So a lot of the scenarios for Xbox development have been simplified. I would say, you know, the reality is pretty much everything that you would expect to see on a desktop is present in UWP on the Xbox. There's a couple of things with credential lockers that are a work in progress that'll be coming along in a little while, I think. And in terms of net new capabilities, there really aren't that.
What about like the extra buttons on the controller or anything? Am I able to receive those?
You are. You can actually plug an Xbox controller into your Windows 10 desktop.
Oh, okay. And so it's not even Xbox. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, so basically, one thing that's interesting is, so on your controller, so for those of you at home, you can play along by watching my hands. they've mapped the keys on the controller to specific actions. So, for example, the B button will map to a back requested event. Mm-hmm. And so the way that you do that is you can actually get your keys. And so you can get virtual keys, which says, okay, the system has translated this key to be equal to X. So you can do a common feature. So your left joystick and your D-pad all equate to the arrow keys on your keyboard. However, there's another value in the key arguments, which is the original key. So you can actually then see and say, okay, it was a right arrow, but it was a gamepad, left stick, right action that initiated that. So you can have different experiences if you want to be able to capture that and turn around and say, okay, I mean something different when I'm using my gamepad on the Xbox.
Yeah, so the virtual keys enum, where everybody catches all, you know, the enter or the escape or whatever, maybe you've never even noticed that all of the gamepad keys are already there, and they've been there since Windows 8, actually. Mm-hmm. We just don't think about using them. Now we will. And it is handy that they are all, many of them, not all of them, many of them are custom mapped or automatically mapped, and developers listening that are like, oh, I hate that, you can override that too.
You can, yeah. For example, it's like the menu button on your gamepad. That maps to the context menu action inside an application to pop up a context menu or whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
And so if you're going to change the behavior of your app so it doesn't map any other app or the operating system, you'd better have a good reason.
Yes. It better be very, very good.
Yeah, I'm just thinking through, like, you know, I bring an app over. Would you say in general, like, I probably shouldn't mess with what I get out of the box, right? It's probably pretty good out of the box.
It is pretty good out of the box. Focus, though, is something that's often a challenge. Mm-hmm. Is there's the basic experience is very logical, but if you look at a lot of apps are designed around the idea that the control you're going to interact with is completely independent. You know, that you can move your mouse and you can click here. It doesn't matter how you got there, because the mouse can magically move anywhere you like. Mm-hmm. So you have to really start thinking about the experience of your user. You want to try and minimize how many times somebody has to press a down or a left or a right action to get to a particular feature. If you've got it buried down to the bottom right on a toolbar or a taskbar, and there's 15 things that you've got to click through to get there, nobody's going to bother using your application. So you have to start to refactor your interaction paradigm there to really take into account this new method. And so that's where the redesign does come into play, that yes, everything will work. However, you can do a lot to improve it.
Like the list view, as you tab around or as you move focus around in Xbox now, as you go into a list view, the list view itself has focus and not the items, and you can move on past it and not get trapped by the items, but you can always select into it.
Yeah, there's a new focus property. Engagement.
Yeah, it is focus, is it's extended. Focus.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a property.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a property that turns it on and off.
Yeah. Exactly. One thing I was wondering too, like my Xbox at home, like do I have anniversary update? Like is it being pushed out really slowly to everybody, or was it, you know, did everybody get it on the same day?
I think it was a staged rollout, but okay. I think you should have it by now. As long as you've got set up in your system, you know, automatically updates.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got the energy saver power mode on, which really shuts the system off when you turn it off, then it probably won't have updated.
Okay. I'll have to check it because my kids, you know, they play like Minecraft on there every day and they didn't say anything. So I'm just not even sure if it updated or not. So I'll have to check it and see if it, you know, I'm just on all their computers and everything. Like I'm just kind of waiting to let it go through, you know, mine, of course I got the update like right away and I was anxious to get it, but for all of their stuff, I want to treat them as like normal humans. And just to see what happens,
just like smaller.
I'm kind of using them as a test case. Like, are they going to come to me and be like, Dad, my Windows is all weird now? You know, it's like, you know, stuff change because there are some minor visual things. Or I'm kind of what I'm expecting actually is that they just at no point are they even going to notice. They're just never going to say anything, and I'm going to go look like, hey, you got the anniversary update. And then I'm kind of wondering on the Xbox what happened there. So
yeah, they're pretty adaptable. I've found certainly
my kids accidentally turned on the narrator where it would say like, you know, back button, you know, and for whatever reason too, my son had to log on every time and it was driving him crazy. And I just kept hearing the Xbox say that, and it was on for like a week. And he finally, he's like, Dad, where's the setting? I'm like, I have no idea. I'm like, just look around for it. And it was like driving him absolutely nuts. Cause every single time he would move focus, it would actually say what was in focus. And after a week, he turned it off. I didn't want to provide assistance. I wanted him to figure it out on his own.
It's funny, though, actually, you know, I need to caveat what I said. I think kids are adaptable when it comes to electronics. Yeah. When it comes to physical things, you move something 4 inches to the right. I can't find it. Where is it? Where Right. Oh,
it's right. Oh, there it is. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's such a good point.
Yeah, so at Build this year, Microsoft announced that everybody's Xbox Ones can be turned into a developer kit, and that we can dev right against the Xboxes we already have.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do we do?
3 years coming.
Yeah. So, how do we do that? And then, what's like the development process like working with Xbox One hardware?
Well, before Darren, I know you're going to answer. Before you do, I think the one question that every developer will want to know about that is it going to wreck my Xbox and it has to become a dev box? And you could toggle between them and go back to normal mode too. So
yes, and it deletes your save games. No, it doesn't. Oh,
they're going to love that.
No, we're in trouble.
Yeah, that needs to be the soundbite. Yeah. So it's very interesting in terms of how this is being achieved. But fundamentally, you download an application that you install onto your Xbox that activates dev mode. You execute that application and it invites you to go to dev.windows.com Xbox activate, and it gives you a code and says go and enter this in to Xbox activate. So you go out to that website, and the first thing you have to do there is you then have to log in with a Windows developer account. And so there's your first gate. You got to make sure you're signed up for Windows developer. Once you've logged in as a Windows developer, you can enter in this code, and I think you can have up to 3 Xboxes that are registered to your account that you can leverage as development machines. So once that particular handshaking has occurred, your Xbox is then prepared to switch to a developer mode. Mm-hmm. And so that developer mode is a completely new runtime environment for your Xbox. So
when you say prepared, that's a big download.
Yes. It's got to do a bunch of downloads.
Oh, okay.
I mean, effectively, you know, Xbox effectively runs a hypervisor. And so this is essentially a new operating system that's going to be run up on underneath the hypervisor environment. And the great thing about that is it's completely sandboxed away from your production game system or your home entertainment system and so on and so forth. Never the twain shall meet in that once you've downloaded that update and once you've transitioned into Xbox – or Xbox developer mode, your Xbox will reboot and it will launch a new operating system that has all of the developer tools on there, has no access to your games, no access to your game saves, so you can't create some little hack utility that's going to go in and make you level 999 in Witcher.
Right. You can't debug Halo. There's nothing exactly. You can do. Not available. Yeah.
And so you can imagine that sitting behind a lot of this is a whole bunch of licensing requirements to make sure that people can't get in and see any of this stuff. So you're in a new environment. You have this Dev Home UWP application that allows you to see what your IP address is, set up your Windows device management portal, register developer accounts that log in so you can actually have a logged in user. You can actually see the installed UWP applications that are available. You can see the status of Xbox Live and make sure those services are available. Mm-hmm. And so you're in a completely different environment.
Yeah. A lot of developers will wonder whether or not you can use Xbox Live in a UWP app on Xbox One.
Yeah. Only if you're on a whitelist. So right. there's a few application vendors out there that require it still, but the general guidance is you don't need to use it for UWP anymore, which actually dramatically simplifies development for the Xbox.
Developers who are used to writing for Xbox in the previous world, when they were even whitelisted, they had things like achievements for productivity apps, mm-hmm. and those aren't part of this either. So this really is – it really feels like UWP on desktop on Xbox just geared towards a 10-foot experience.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so if – you know, like I'm sure Netflix will be the perfect example of an app where there's so much reuse from what they've accomplished on desktop. They'll be able to pull it over. It'll be interesting. Do you know, Darren, does Xbox have the same do they have an adaptive app, or do you think they have two apps? What would you do if you were them?
So I know because I'm writing one, the Stars application. I'm actually working on that, so that will be coming out sometime soon. We're actually building a dedicated Xbox experience.
Yeah.
And because that's actually going to be the primary launch for their UWP application. So we're focusing on the 10-foot experience first. UWP gives us a number of different ways to build our UI. You know, if we're actually using a consistent experience and we're going to be scaling, say we want to use a hamburger menu and want that across all platforms, then you can very much use adaptive and responsive design approaches and have single views. If you're going to have a different visual experience between those things, then you actually probably want to build custom views for a particular family. And that's what we're doing. Stars application is building a custom view that's really very similar to their other 10-foot experiences, but bringing it to the Xbox.
Yep. I think we hear this recommendation over and over. As you cross family, you really start reproducing your app rather than super dynamically adapting it. It's just that's a headache for developers and designers and maintaining developers.
Yeah. The key thing about that, though, is when you say reproducing, we're redoing the front end. Most of the back end, well, pretty much all of the back end is identical. You know, your same service calls, same business logic. You can even maintain the same view models if it makes sense. You're just building customized views that, say for the Xbox, you may simplify your UI. Instead of having 15 controls on there, you might coalesce that around 5 core functions that you perform on there and so on.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So what about remote debugging? So, you know, I have the Xbox set up in developer mode. Mm-hmm. Like, can I actually step through the code in Visual Studio and be running it on my Xbox?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be awful if you could?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
You should document.write over and over and over.
It still happens out there, man. I mean, where it's like, you know,
not in the Microsoft world.
Yeah. But it used to be, you know, like build, deploy, you know, it's like 5 minutes and then you run it. Ah, that's not what I wanted.
Yeah, it's actually a very interesting flow that they have now. In Visual Studio 2015, I think it was update 3, they introduced a new kind of log-on capability for authentication for remote devices. And so in Visual Studio, you enter in the IP address of the system you want to connect to. You specify your authentication protocol. And whereas, say, if you're connecting to another Windows box, you might have generally been using Windows authentication. Mm-hmm. Instead, we use a universal authentication scheme.
Yeah.
So then we hit deploy. And
just code feels so much easier.
Yeah.
So much easier.
Exactly. You hit deploy and it starts to reach out to the Xbox and it goes, oh, we haven't established a relationship yet. And so what you get is you go onto the Xbox and you open up the developer home application, mm-hmm. and there's a section in there which says pair with Visual Studio. So you're going to add a new pairing relationship, and it gives you a 5-character code.
So you're like authorizing it.
Exactly. You take that 5-character code, you enter it into the PIN dialog that shows up inside Visual Studio, and that establishes the relationship. And from that point forward, you can keep connecting backwards and forwards.
And now, Darren, there's a lot of developers listening, and they're like, okay, I'm going to have to download this episode, rewind it, pause it, play it, in order to get these details.
Okay.
It'd be awfully nice if there was some sort of course that went through all this detail.
Wouldn't it be even nicer, Jerry, if it was on like Microsoft Virtual Academy or something?
Yeah, totally free, and maybe presented by a couple dynamite speakers.
Now, one of them English, one of them an idiot.
I'm not English, though.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we'll have a link to that in the show notes, apparently.
So there's a Microsoft Virtual Academy course. What's its official name? Moving your app to UWP or something like that? After Xbox. I don't know what it is. Has it been published yet?
No.
So hopefully it'll be published this month. This is August.
Yeah. Okay.
A little pressure for the team.
Yeah. So this episode, it's going to be a few days before this goes live. Actually, it's going to be about a week. So the clock is ticking, guys.
Okay.
So the new Xbox One S has 4K support, which means 4K support for streaming, and I'm not quite sure what the exact lingo is. So my question is, can I make a 4K UWP app?
Basically, yes. I mean, what happens? So the point you're making there is your gaming doesn't become 4K,
right?
And that's mm-hmm. correct. You know, effectively, your gaming resolution is still 1080p. It will be upscaled if you have a 4K display, but you're not suddenly going to get a 4K resolution in your games. However, when it comes to the system, so your system menus, all of those things get rendered in 4K.
Okay.
And if you have an application, one of the nice things about the way that UWP works is we're dealing with what's called effective pixels. So we lay everything out in terms of an effective resolution that the system then manages behind the scenes in terms of a scaling factor to your display. And it's not just going to be scaling up and scaling down bitmaps. It's actually going to apply it so that the fonts are drawn appropriately mm-hmm. using all of the available pixel resolution to make them appear as attractive as possible. So yes, your applications absolutely will be able to exploit 4K. However, of course, you're not going to be building your application exclusively for a 4K resolution right. because that won't work across all your different TV experiences.
Yeah, and because XAML is all vector-based, there's no reason it wouldn't automatically be as good as it can possibly be projected.
Yeah.
With the exception of perhaps your bitmap assets that you provide.
Because
go up to, I think 200% is still the top.
Yeah, so you might want to be able to add in your different scale factor of that. Digital okay. assets from that perspective.
Yeah, because you could make an app that looks really nice then on a 4K TV if you have the Xbox One S. Because just correct me if I'm wrong, but the original Xbox One, those apps, even if you hook it up to a 4K TV, are going to be 1080p?
1080p okay. scaled up.
Okay.
Yeah. And it has to be scaled up either by the TV or your receiver or whatever.
Yeah.
The Xbox isn't going to scale up to 4K for you.
Okay.
Right.
All right, so at this point, you know, we've come up with an awesome idea. We've tailored it just for the Xbox. The app's rock solid, and it's not a game. Can I just put that up in the Xbox One store and everybody can download it? Or are there any additional restrictions that I might have to think about as a developer?
So the key thing is we actually have a single app store now across all of Windows 10. There's no Xbox app store.
Mm-hmm.
All it will be is you'll flag your application in the Windows Store as targeting the Xbox family.
Yeah, so right now if you submit an app to dev.windows.com, there's a checkbox. One of them is desktop, one of them is mobile, one of them is HoloLens, and there's one that says, I don't know if it says Xbox or Xbox One, but it's Xbox One.
Yeah. So it's as easy as that.
It's drag and drop. You just point and click.
Yeah.
Okay.
In a way, it is actually that easy. It's kind of crazy. Yeah.
In comparison to what it used to be like, it's insanely simple now.
That's awesome. So because it's so simple now, are there any examples of UWP apps that are already in the Xbox Store that you guys know about?
Since last week?
Yeah.
Certainly the Netflix app was a launch app that's available.
Probably Hulu too, I would guess. Some of these big bigger names, but I don't know that. I just am guessing now.
Yeah.
I will say another benefit of having it in a single store like this is that you get licensing as well, so that I can buy my application on my phone and run it on desktop without having to buy it again. And, of course, the developer gets to choose whether or not that's actually how it's going to work. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, if you set it to be that way just as a purchase price app, then you get it across all the families for a single purchase. That's nice for in-app purchases as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what is, like, the best example of a UWP app in the store right now? You think it's probably, like, something like Netflix?
I would say so. The funny thing is, you know, I'm developing on it, and so in developer mode, because I'm in that sandbox, I can't access the store, so I can't see what's on there.
That's hilarious.
It's like coding in a dark room in the basement. Yeah, just slide me exactly. Get away.
Yeah.
You've been watching me again.
Yeah. So what kind of performance can I expect? So obviously, you know, if I'm doing like I guess this sort of leads into a different question is whether or not I get GPU support. Because I'm thinking on the Xbox, and I don't know a lot about its architecture, but I'm guessing it has a really good GPU, relatively speaking. Mm-hmm. And the CPU is probably like nothing to get too excited about. It's probably not like a quad core i7 or anything. So like, you know, how does that affect my actual performance, or does that not really come into play?
Let's start with the desktop. On the desktop side, mm-hmm. you're already guaranteed a certain percentage of the CPU, and you're already guaranteed a certain memory allocation that you, and a quota that you can't go over, as well as network usage and things like that. That flows into Xbox as well, but Darren, there are different numbers on Xbox.
There's different numbers, yes, absolutely. So, you know, I think you get 75% of the GPU and those kind of factors. Because, again, as we were talking about, you know, we're in a virtualized environment, and I believe we actually even use app virtualization to start up the UWP apps on the Xbox. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you first launch a UWP app, it says, please wait, we're getting your application ready for launch. And that's it provisioning up that environment for it to run. So because it's running inside Hypervisor, you've got these additional quotas that can be placed on the application. That's another reason why they don't want to have gaming experience inside that UWP environment, because it is throttled. And you're not going to get that the kind of throughput that you would expect if you had a full-blown game release.
Yeah, and you get things like suspension and all these things that could totally wreck your game. Darren, do I have to use Visual Studio 2015 Update 3?
You have to start there, or you can use Visual Studio 15 Preview 3 as well. That actually works really well for development as well.
Okay. Which do you use?
I use Visual Studio 15 Preview 3.
Okay.
Cool. I love the XAML edit and continue. It is wonderful.
Oh, that sounds cool. So again, I'm gonna sort of ask the question again, but I'm just like raw CPU power. I mean, does that ever really come into play? Like, is it ever an issue? I'm trying to think of an application that would use like a lot of, you know, I don't know. So I'm doing some kind of math type thing or something where I am actually using the CPU a lot. Like, is the Xbox, is it ever really an issue how powerful that CPU is?
It is resource constrained. You know, the application I'm working on right now, one of the things that we do is we pull down a lot of JSON that we pass and build out catalogs and so on and so forth. And so, you know, we make good use of the extended splash screen whilst we're doing an initial ramp up, and we do some other tricks to have things running, you know, on parallel tasks and so on and so forth to get those things staged as we're going forward. So, yes, you'll definitely notice the difference if you're used to running on your Surface Book and you jump onto the Xbox. As you say, you know, the graphics card is an extraordinary piece of engineering on the Xbox. We're not leveraging it that much in terms of our overall performance. But in Windows Anniversary Edition, there's a whole slew of composition-based features that allow you to do some really interesting animations.
Beautiful
and effects
animations.
And so on and so forth, yeah. And because we've got such a powerful graphics card sitting on the Xbox, we're able to make full use of those to make our applications really attractive. So, you know, certainly if you're doing a lot of calculations, a lot of number crunching, doing a lot of memory manipulation and so on and so forth, you'll notice a bit of a performance hit versus what you're doing on, say, the desktop. But if you're making good use of understanding whether you should be using a task because you're I/O bound or a thread because you're CPU bound, then you can actually get across that, and you still should have a very, very smooth UI experience.
Okay.
And a lot of developers building UWP have already had to start thinking this way because of phone anyway, and it's just that same kind of muscle memory that they're going to be using in Xbox as well.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing you probably run into, I mean, all us developers, we probably are all running SSDs, and then you go to the Xbox and you don't have an SSD, so that's probably a little bit of a learning challenge too, like you said, with the IO, just doing asynchronous programming properly so that you're, you know, you're not saying like, oh, I'm going to read, you know, this massive file from the disk or whatever, and I'll just make the user wait for that, you know, and you just lock up the UI while that's happening. Like you probably, you can do that. Maybe you can get away with that locally because the disk is so fast, but you know, you just have to keep that in mind. But the fact that you can do edit and continue and use your Xbox remote, it, you're going to see all that stuff in real time. So that's really awesome.
Yeah. Darren, I'm going to ask, let me ask you a couple questions that I think developers might want to know. Would you want, can I use Cortana?
Yes. You can use Cortana on the Xbox One. You can't use it inside your app. There are certain things you can use in your app. So, for example, if you happen to be building a media application, then the Cortana media commands are interacting with the system media transport control, which is the thing that controls play and so on and so forth. And so those commands will work with your application. But you can't do the things that we started to do in Windows 10, which is creating voice commands for custom launching of your applications, voice commands that you're listening to inside of your application. You can't leverage them at this point.
Can I access the file system?
You can access the file system. You just can't access all of it. So, you know, as with most store applications, you're siloed in that you've got your own file system hive that you can interact with. And you can do that without any problem using storage file and so on and so forth. You can't interact with, say, things like photos or whatever because you actually don't have photos on the Xbox One. So there's some limitations there moving across to Xbox One from desktop. But, you know, in general, those things are the same.
So I should make a Photos app for Xbox.
Exactly. So for, as an example, if your photos are in OneDrive, then there's a OneDrive API that you can leverage and so on.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I've actually because there is a OneDrive client, though, for Xbox, right? Because I remember looking at, my photos and videos and stuff in there.
Yep.
Which is pretty cool.
The biggest thing that I wanted to know that if you could use with Xbox, can you use template 10 with Xbox?
Yeah, that's the real question, people.
Well, the answer is you will be able to. the template 10
such a good setup, and then you
update
get that.
There. Yeah. I know. None of if you're writing specifically for anniversary update, template 10 hasn't released its anniversary update. Okay.
Yeah, just because you're just going on podcasts and conferences and not getting your real work done.
Swanning around. Not getting your real volunteer work done.
Yeah.
Right, it's all community service.
Who's that? I'll pick up litter.
Yeah. How about I write a framework?
Nice. So what about Smart Glass? Can I use that somehow?
So Smart Glass is really a sort of deprecated from a certain perspective. There's this new thing called Project Rome, which is your evolution of Smart Glass. Instead of just something that's targeted Xbox exclusively, it's now for Windows 10. It's for Windows 10 universal apps, and it's a second screen experience that you can leverage across the board.
Okay.
Across the board, guys. I mean, so think of this. You can open up your app on Xbox One and execute a background service that you've written on your phone. It's that's in Germany. It's absolutely incredible. It's not done on local network.
Yeah. So what does that mean for like Smart Glass on iPhone then?
Well, all of the Xbox applications that are across platform, those are all moving to Rome. I don't know whether they've moved to Rome already. I don't have privy into that.
I gotcha.
But that's fundamentally the new foundation. It's one of the things I kind of threw out earlier on is the Windows device portal. So that's a new HTTP server that you can connect to on any Windows 10 device that gives you access, as long as you enable it. It's not a security hole. Don't give away the golden key.
Nobody does that.
That allows you to monitor remotely your system. You can see a lot of performance metrics. You can actually see the Xbox version of the portal allows you to see UWP apps, their status, whether in suspension or not. You can actually bring them forward. You can actually easily grab a screenshot, which when you're building these high fidelity user interfaces, you know, designers who live in Photoshop really like you to give you a bitmap so that they can then overlay and go, oh, I must see you're off by 3 pixels on this one, and so on and so forth. It's very annoying. But it's a great feature.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, I could VPN into my home and I could bring an Xbox controller into work here and I can actually play my home Xbox here from work.
Yeah. Don't do multiplayer.
Yeah. I'm just thinking because that streaming for Xbox is just so cool.
It is.
Because my kids, you know, they're just like, oh, you're on the TV. We want to use it for this. And it's like, go to your room. Go play it from your computer, you know, over that. And it's just
or even split screen. I was talking to somebody at that conference. He's like, oh, Halo 5 had split screen. I'm like, you don't have a computer? it's easy and awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And then they didn't realize you could do like multiplayer over it. So, you know, they're just like, well, then, you know, Alex can't play. And I'm like, you can play multiplayer on the streaming. it's just like a remote screen. So
are your kids like, I'm embarrassed.
Why? Oh, because they didn't figure that out.
Personal now. They didn't know you could multi. No,
it is funny. Like they do the streaming, you know, and they think nothing of it. And then it's just like, oh, we didn't know you could do multiple. Like, well, I don't know what made them think that they couldn't.
Yeah.
It's just really weird. I don't know. Developing brains, you know how it goes. So anyway, anything that we didn't mention that you want to mention?
Well, one of the things, if you put in a new game right now in Xbox, like the first thing it has to do is download all the assets, you know, before you can really play. If you download a UWP, you have as a developer, you have the option whether or not you break up your assets so that it's a smaller download and you can play faster kind of idea.
Oh, because I've seen that. I download a game and then it says, like, you can start playing now.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Because you're halfway in or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so UWP still has that same metaphor that we had on the desktop where I can take my big, you know, assets and my small assets and bundle them into two separate packages and you get whichever one's right for you. But it's worth saying that the Xbox always gets the best. So it's always going to be the largest download.
Oh, interesting.
Because you start at 100%.
Well, I got a fiber connection now, so I'm not afraid of downloads.
Yeah, because it's supposed
to be. Yeah, no, you don't, Jason.
Yeah, yeah. That's the only thing. Yeah, my landscapers cut it, so they're working on that right now. So, yeah, I have LTE. It's all I have. So, yeah, big downloads are an issue. Okay, anything else?
One thing I would say is, you know, obviously the Windows anniversary on the Xbox is a work in progress at this moment in time. So there are some features that aren't in there. This is the first release. We found a couple of bugs and issues in the platform that we've reported in that are getting worked on.
Okay.
So, you know, you might run into some of these things and,
if you're a developer, I would say, you know, that shouldn't scare you off.
Exactly.
As a user, you know, wait another week and it'll be fixed. Right.
Yeah. Right. Right. Not week, but right. In fact, think of features.
Whatever the amount of unit of time is.
There's like all the features that work today, which has to be closer to like 70 to 80%, and then you've got this all the ones that will never work, right? Like inking. Yeah. I don't say never, but at least for a while. But then you have these ones that just haven't caught it yet, but they didn't want to miss the anniversary update window, and so they released it anyway. And they've dedicated to put all of those in, and it's just a matter of time now. So it's nice. You're like, this would be awesome on Xbox. It belongs in Xbox. It just doesn't work on Xbox. Well, you've identified one of those that's coming. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Great. Because the team wants it to be in parity.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, Carl, do we have any tips of the week or just nothing?
No, I'm going to call lazy.
And we got the game, which all the cards are here. So we're running out of questions at home, but I happen to be in the office. Totally prepared. Opening it right now. Drum roll, please. Okay.
It's going to be as interesting as the last one.
We'll start with Jerry probably wants to start, so I'm going to pick Darren. Okay. Darren, pick a number between 1 and 4 inclusive.
3.
Oh my god. Would you rather be great at making loud, rude noises with your armpits?
Done.
Or you got to pick one though. Or be great at whistling tunes out of your nose even though a little snot comes out with the music.
Oh, I think it's got to be the latter, yeah. Nose whistling for the win.
Yeah, that's so unique. I mean, anybody make loud noises with their armpits.
Yeah, that's
even
true.
Jerry Nixon.
Yeah. Even. Okay, Jerry, pick a number.
One.
One, okay. Would you rather take a long, bumpy ride sitting jammed in the baby seat of a small shopping cart? So it's not just a baby seat. Like, it's a small shopping cart.
Which also means
cart.
I'm backwards. Just,
yeah, you're
right.
Backwards. Okay. Long, bumpy ride. I don't know how you're going to fit in it, but we're going to fit you in there somehow. Or take a long ride in the empty part of a cement truck that usually holds the cement and is turning.
That sounds with a skateboard. That sounds awesome.
With a skateboard.
It does.
Yeah, except yeah. Is it pitch black, though? I mean, that makes everything a little crazy.
Especially once you fall. How do you ever – how long is this ride?
Yeah,
you especially when one of those stirring veins comes down and encourages you to move.
Well, no, if you were in the shopping cart in the cement truck, then you'd be fine, I think, because it would always keep you at the bottom.
Oh, they got the stirring veins.
Yeah. Those have been taken out for the ride.
Oh, here, Carl, we'll let you play. Pick a number.
Number two.
Would you rather wake up to find your neck has grown 5 inches longer or that your rear end has doubled in size? I like that it's rear end.
This feels a little too close for comfort.
Does that happen?
So neck
or
rear end, Carl?
Yeah, I'll go with the long neck. Because I think number two already happened, so.
You know what? At the quadruple. That's good. Oh, man. All right, let's hear yours, Jason.
Oh, yeah. You always make
do the remaining one.
I'm going to do the last one. In gym class, would I rather have to race the fastest kid in school and lose or race the slowest kid but just barely win? I guess I'll pick the fastest kid. I probably would barely win.
Yeah, one in your face.
Yeah. That's probably the reality. That's probably what I would do. I'm just bad. I'm evil. Okay. So obviously you guys have an awesome Microsoft Virtual Academy course, which we'll try to promote the heck out of because that sounds really super awesome. But where else can people find you guys?
Go ahead, Darren.
Well, I'm on Twitter, at Darren May.
Okay.
Website is http://crank211.com.
Okay. Which is awesome.
Yeah. So generally there's obviously lots of videos of us on Virtual Academy waxing lyrical and sometimes imparting useful information.
Okay.
Darren sold one of his R's, so he's only got one R in Darren.
Yeah. It's in indentured servitude somewhere.
it's out there. Bought your transatlantic flight. The I am at jerrynixon.com, at Jerry Nixon. There you go.
On the Twitters. Okay.
On the Twitters, jerry.nixon@microsoft.com. You can email me too. How about that?
Oh, yeah. Here comes the mail, man.
It's fantastic.
Okay. I won't answer you.
And yeah.
No change there, then.
If you're external, it just goes in the trash directly.
Right.
And where can people find you, Carl?
You can find me on Twitter at Carl Schweitzer.
And you can find me at ytechie.com or on Twitter at twitter.com/ytechie. So Darren and Jerry, thank you so much for coming on here yet again. But you guys always have such good information, so we always appreciate it when you come on. And you know that you're always welcome, so thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Great to be here.